You've heard the phrase before, right? Give them a taste of their own medicine. Yeah, it's time to pick a fight. Hi there. Welcome to today's broadcast of Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. We're in Exodus chapter 7, verses 8 through 13. The message is called, It's Time to Pick a Fight. And it is that moment in time when Moses comes in under God's power and strength, using Aaron's rod, picks a fight with Pharaoh. Man, what a fight it's going to be. Join us for today's broadcast of Abounding Grace, our teacher and pastor now. Again in Exodus chapter 7, here's Pastor Chris.
Exodus chapter 7, beginning at verse 8, and we'll read through verse 13. I was going to start the first plague this morning, but I realized how important this little section here of Aaron's rod is, and I don't want to move too quickly through that. So this is Exodus chapter 7, beginning at verse 8 through 13. This is the word of the Lord. Then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, when Pharaoh says to you, prove yourselves by working a miracle, then you shall say to Aaron, take your staff and cast it down before Pharaoh, that it may become a serpent. So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as the Lord commanded. Aaron cast down his staff before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh summoned the wise men and the sorcerers, and they, the magicians of Egypt, also did the same by their secret arts. For each man cast down his staff, and they became serpents. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Still, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them as the Lord had said. May the Lord bless the hearing this morning of his word. A key focal point of the biblical writers here, especially in Exodus, was to assure the people of God throughout history when they wrote this, when Moses wrote this, to assure the people of God throughout history of the certain victory over the kingdom of darkness and the ruler of the darkness, Satan. Certainly, the certainty of our deliverance. This is what their goal was, the certainty of it. But the scriptures also push us in that certainty as it makes that known for us to have a confidence in that deliverance, a believing and trusting that the Lord will bring that deliverance and that it will happen. What governs us today as Christians? Well, we've looked a lot at this, but I think we all would agree that what is governing us right now, what's happening to us right now, is that we're starting to feel everything turn on us, and we have a lot of fear that arises in our hearts about the future, and I think a lot about my children's future. I mean, they've been saying this sexual revolution has been happening now for some time, and it's running its course as everything is attempting to be redefined. Certain practices that at one time were in the closet are now have been pushed to be not just tolerated, now they are mainstream and accepted, and now what has happened is our views are not being tolerated. They are soon to be legislated against, and then we will be forced into the closet with our views. Think of the sweeping change of that. My point is that we feel as Christians that we're losing a lot right now, a lot of ground. And the violence that seems to be characterizing the times in which we live, I don't have to rehearse everything again that was in the news this week of ISIS. I don't have to go through all of that. You know, it's a changing world. It's a changing world, and things are really happening. Things are moving. It's going somewhere. What do we do, though, at moments like this when the beast rises out of the sea, when things turn bestial in a nation, when things go that route? What do Christians do? Cower. Retreat. That's what we study with Moses. We get scared. That's the goal of certain groups, is to promote fear. God has been working on his servant Moses to build a confidence in what he's doing. God has been working hard on his servant Moses to build a confidence in what he's doing. It took Moses a lot of sleepless nights to get here, let me tell you. He doubted. He wanted to quit. He wanted to give up. He was frustrated with progress. He didn't understand what the Lord was doing. He didn't see any victory at all. He was confused. I mean, it has really been the Lord first and foremost in Exodus dealing with his prophet before this project went and got underway. And as we now enter into a new section of Exodus, what we really do see with Moses is that he has come to a place of trusting the Lord. He has come to a place of trusting the Lord, even though he doesn't fully understand or see how this is all going to go or work. That's okay. And that's important for us. You get a sense that the work has been done at this point in preparing Moses for what the Lord was sending him to do. Here's what I love about this particular section this morning. Now it's as if Moses, letting go of the fear and trusting the Lord and his word, is now stepping back and watching the Lord work. You say, Moses, exactly what I tell you to say. I don't want you saying anything else. That's what a prophet did. A prophet brought the words of the Lord. And you say it in boldness, and you say it in confidence. You remember the first encounter with Pharaoh? He went in with boldness. Pharaoh says no, and he says, please. Not the kind of confidence you should have. This is a command. Come out. This is the confidence that I want. And I want you to have that kind of confidence in the midst of uncertainty and the midst of distress. And this is where Moses has come. This is where the Lord has brought him. And this morning is crucial to our study because we have the Lord beginning to show and reveal his supremacy as king and Lord over all. And the doom of Pharaoh's kingdom. The impending doom. And we should be encouraged to know that this is just as true today. The Lord is reigning. Do you believe that? In the midst of all this? The Lord's throne is set. It's fixed in heaven, John says, I saw it. The battle is mine, says the Lord. I'll fight it. I will gain the victory I have. But what's before us this morning, and I tried to capture it with the title. I had a lot of titles I went through. I thought War of the Worlds would be a good one. But then I thought, no. God's picking a fight. God's picking a fight. It's time to pick a fight, Moses. It's time. And I thought about that as before launching into the first plague, which I really wanted to do. I'm ready to get to 7 days of blood. That's next week. But I realized that this little confrontation with the rod is a much greater scene than I ever understood or appreciated. When I was a child, I always thought, oh, this is neat. The rod becomes a snake and it gobbles up Pharaoh's snakes. That's really neat. And I never really understood, though, the significance of it. I guess I thought, well, it's really neat as a kid, but something greater the Lord could have done, right? Doesn't seem all that great at the outset. I mean, he could have shot a fireball at Pharaoh. A rod to a snake. Why was this the first thing he chose to do? Why did he put this on display? Why did he reveal this? And I've come to realize that this little event is absolutely important. The kind of prologue to the whole is absolutely important. It's a prophetic display of Pharaoh's defeat. In other words, you know what it is? It's a little demonstration. It's a little play, if you will. It's a little rehearsal. It's an open window. It's a microcosm, if you will, prototype of the catastrophe that's coming upon Pharaoh. It's a preview of coming attractions. There's going to be some real swallowing going on. And in that vein, this intro was meant to say, it's over before it starts. It's over before it starts. You don't hold a candle, Pharaoh, to the Lord's power. That's what this little scene is this morning. It's God mocking Pharaoh. It's Psalm 2. Saying, you're toast. Let me show you how this is going to go, Pharaoh. When Moses had originally gone, and Pharaoh in his pompous reply said, who is the Lord that I should obey him? Thus says Pharaoh. Little did he know what he just called down. Pharaoh had made himself to be God in Egypt. We know this. Exalting his throne over the stars of God. This is all the language of Scripture of an Antichrist figure, of a man exalting himself over all that is called God or that's worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself to be God. And that's what Egypt believed about Pharaoh. It was an Antichrist kingdom. It really was. The most powerful of the day. Nobody rivaled Egypt. Nobody could deal with their horses and chariots. And for 400 years, they had afflicted God's people. For 400 years, these weak little Israelites were bound up and captive by this monster. We typically viewed this event as something that happened on an earthly level, and that's true. It's just telling us a story of deliverance on earth. There's no doubt. But it's also explaining for us the real spiritual battle that's going on behind the scenes. Moses was, the Lord said, you will be as God to Pharaoh, and you will have a prophet, your own prophet, Aaron. As Moses spoke, God spoke. It was God speaking. Moses was the mouthpiece. And that was why God was so concerned about what Moses would say. You have to speak just what I speak, Moses. You have to say just what I tell you to say. You are not on your own on this. You're representing me and my prophet. And we looked at last time who that prophet is. It's Christ. A prophet was promised to Moses. Here, a type in Aaron. But what we have here is the whole display already of that event in Genesis chapter 3 when the Lord had cursed the serpent and the Lord had said there is a warfare starting. There's two peoples on the earth. There's two seeds on the earth and a warfare has been inaugurated. And now this warfare between the two worlds has grown to a cosmic scope, and here it is now showing itself at the beginning of Exodus. The Lord's inaugurating the war. He's taking the war to Satan and his kingdom and the bondage that he tries to hold us in as he has sway over this sad world. The Lord is fighting and assaulting. So that's what I want to consider with you this morning. It's a very simple passage. It's really just a proclamation of doom, ultimately of Satan and his kingdom. Let's look at our text. In verse 8, we read, then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, when Pharaoh says to you, prove yourselves by working a miracle, then you shall say to Aaron, take your staff and cast it down before Pharaoh that it may become a serpent. And you'll notice in verse 10 that Moses and Aaron went in and they did just as the Lord commanded. Notice the submission there that's emphasized. The prophet is doing just as the Lord commanded. He's under the umbrella of the divine will. It's the safest place he could be. Even before Pharaoh, he is now representing God. So the Lord tells them exactly what to do, knowing how this is going to go, not waiting to try to figure out the future, telling them the future, telling them how this is going to go. Pharaoh is going to demand a sign. And here's what I want you to do. You speak to Aaron, speak to your prophet, and you tell him to perform it. And notice how the Lord wanted it to appear that way. Moses was to speak to Aaron. Aaron was to take the rod that had been handed to Moses, and Aaron was to cast it on the ground. And God wanted Pharaoh to see how a prophet functions, to hear the words of the prophet. So, this is exactly what happens. He casts the serpent on the ground, the rod, and it becomes a serpent. This is a showdown. The showdown has started. It's a challenge. We have to see it that way. It is a provocation and a challenge to Pharaoh's authority. We read that Aaron takes that giant rod and he casts it on the ground and it became a serpent. Fascinating that the first thing God chose to put on display in Egypt was a serpent. Don't you think? It's really important to understand in the Exodus. So important. You'll never appreciate it or understand its magnificence and glory of deliverance until you understand what God is doing in putting himself on display as the only true God. There is no other. And that all the disasters that are about to unfold, all the disasters, all the plagues, all the direct assaults are given with a purpose. The true God of heaven and earth is now going to hit and pick up all of their gods and blast them in front of them. The frogs, the lice, the boils, the hail were all judgments upon other claims of sovereignty of Egyptian gods in Egypt. All different parts of creation that were being worshipped, Romans 1, instead of the creator. And he's targeting their gods purposely, directly, with intention, and smashing down the idols. He starts with serpents. It's fascinating. There's a few different words that could have been chosen as a word for serpent. The word here, tanin, is a more general word that describes a giant snake or reptile. Often used to describe in the scriptures massive venomous snakes. You need to understand a little bit the Egyptian view of snakes. I've raised that a few times, but this is where it all kind of culminates. It was the symbol of Egypt. You read through Egyptian literature, and they were awestruck by snakes. They feared them. They feared them greatly. They would carry around with them amulets to protect them from bites from the snake gods. If you were ever bitten by a snake, the magicians were called in, and they would perform all sorts of magic to try to cleanse the person from the bite. People really feared the snakes in Egypt. Serpent worship dominated the Nile. There were all sorts of these serpent gods in the Nile that they worshipped. Even today, temples have been found in Egypt where the Egyptians worshipped, and you have all the images, which I've captured for you, of these serpent gods. Wadjet was the serpent goddess of Lower Egypt, and she was a rearing cobra who was known as the great protector of Pharaoh. Think about this. Ready to strike and to kill all his enemies. And I've said this before. When Moses walked in and they gazed upon Pharaoh, that's what they saw on his crown. Don't mess with me. Wadjet will strike you if you talk to me irreverently. They would have seen that massive image of Wadjet right on the crown. And lo and behold, it's that Pharaoh adopts for himself on his crown, a cobra as the symbol of his authority. This was a way not only of making people fear him, but it was a way of trying to instill all kinds of fear in any of his enemies. Remember, Pharaoh was a god in Egyptian religion. This is how the Egyptians worshiped this god, as the defender of Pharaoh, who would literally strike venom, put venom, death venom into his enemies. Israel knew about all these snake gods. You had Renenutet. This god was a fire-breathing cobra who was the protector of Pharaoh's clothes and in constant pursuit to instill fear into his enemies. One of the Ramses was even said to have created this serpent god. None of them was really as powerful as Apep or Apophis. He was the serpent god who personified evil and, listen to this, was known as holding the power of darkness, represented as a giant black hole who, and I quote, swallowed his enemies into non-existence, held the power of natural disasters. Storms, earthquakes, solar eclipses. The kingdom was dominated by snake gods, one of which swallowed all the enemies. When Pharaoh took the oath of office, by the way, let me read you his oath of office, which they have dug up. Listen to this. This is what he would say in his oath of office. O great one, O magician, O fiery snake, let there be terror of me like the terror of thee. Let there be fear of me like the fear of thee. Let there be awe of me like the awe of thee. Let me rule a leader of the living. Let me be a powerful leader of spirits. An Antichrist kingdom running its course, a cycle of iniquity. It helps us a little bit with something like Revelation 12, doesn't it? That serpent of old called the devil and Satan who deceives the whole world. Interesting how Ezekiel described Pharaoh. Ezekiel 29, speak and say, thus says the Lord God, behold, I am against you, O Pharaoh, king of Egypt, O great Tanin, serpent, who lies in the midst of his rivers, who has said, my river is my own. I have made it for myself. I'm putting hooks in your jaws. Can you picture this now? Aaron comes in the royal palace. Imagine all the servants working, bowing. He comes in the royal palace and he grabs a rod. Moses says, throw it down. And he casts the rod on the ground, and there it becomes a serpent. That's a challenge. That's the greatest provocation you could give in Pharaoh's kingdom. Time to pick a fight. One pastor said it would be like walking in the White House and carrying in a bald eagle and wringing its neck. You think that'd go over? No, the environmentalists would take you down. You wouldn't have to worry about the president. At the beginning of Genesis, Satan had entered into the garden and become a serpent to Eve, deceiving her. God cursed him. Remember what he said? You are more cursed than all the cattle and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you shall go and you shall lick dust all the days of your life. I remember years ago, Darcy told me that when she attended USC, one of her professors told her, and they were studying the skeletal structure of the snake, and one of her USC professors told her that you can tell that one day that thing walked. It has a skeletal structure so that at one time you know it had legs. God put it on the earth and made it lick dust in the curse. Now God comes into Satan's den. Think about this. God sends his prophet right on into Satan's kingdom. Think of the garden. God returns it. Walks right on into Satan's kingdom and casts down a cursed snake on the ground that licks the dust. Right in front of Pharaoh. The Lord just laid claim to whatever they believed about the power of the snake. And I could have titled my message, Lord of the Snakes, couldn't I have? Pharaoh had adopted this as Egypt's greatest symbol of power. God comes and assaults it.
Hit them where it counts, hit them where it hurts, and hit them where it'll do the most damage and make the biggest statement. That's God, right? Man, what an episode today here on Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Just enough time to leave you with our contact information. We'd love to hear from you. It's always a delight knowing you're being blessed by this radio program. Reach out to us at our website, agradio.org. Questions@agradio.org if you wish to email us any questions you might have or praise reports, comments about the program. Or give us a call, 888-504-8805. By the way, when you visit our website, agradio.org, tons of resource material for you to tap into, as well as links to our other platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Again, all at agradio.org. And that phone number, once again, is 888-504-8805. Looking to write to us? If you're old school, the address for your envelope is Abounding Grace Radio, P.O. Box 732. Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. Hey, thanks for joining us today. Until next time, God bless. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday.
That's right, Chris, we would. And our worship services, because of the heat and earlier darkness, begin 8:30 for the morning service, 5 p.m. for the evening service, and both are held under the tent at Calvin Christian. Well, here's Pastor Chris once again. If you'd like to know more, with information on how to reach out to us,
you can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.